Hi, I'm Steve Engelberg, Editor-in-Chief of ProPublica. We're here today with Theo Meyer and Al Shaw, ProPublica reporters who, for the past several months, have been looking into the issue of how FEMA draws the maps for flood insurance, a seemingly arcane topic that has an enormous amount of relevance to people up and down the coasts and waterways of the United States. Welcome, Theo. Welcome, Al.
Hello.
Hi.
So, Theo, tell us a little bit about this story. How did you get into it in the first place?
I started looking into flood insurance maps when I first read about the National Flood Insurance Program, which was established in 1968 and fell $18 billion into debt after Hurricane Katrina. It's currently more than $24 billion in debt and really doesn't have any way to get money to get out of debt.
Well, what's the idea of the program in the first place? When Congress created this, what were they thinking?
The idea, I think, was to insure homeowners who could not get coverage through the private market because floods were so destructive that it really wasn't available for many people. But it's sort of morphed into something else in a way. It's one of several ways, as we've written, in which the federal government subsidizes and sort of encourages development in coastal areas that are vulnerable to climate change and to rising sea levels now, along with several other government programs.
We'll stay on the history just for a moment because that just seems a little bit odd. In the first place, if the free market isn't producing any insurance, that's probably because it's not a profitable venture. So why does the government want to step into a sort of money-losing area, at least from the perspective of private industry, to build houses that are likely to be flooded? I don't get it.
Well, the government's not building the houses. It's simply that it's easier for private citizens to build houses when they can get flood insurance and know at least some of their losses will be covered in the event of Hurricane Sandy or Hurricane Katrina.
Right. And one of the other things they do through the program is encourage people to elevate their houses. So you can get a lower rate by building above what they call the base flood elevation. You'll have a lower rate and you'll probably have a more sustainable situation down the line.
All right, so the government takes out the insurance, people go out and build their houses in all these coastal areas, and then what happens?
FEMA has maps across the nation that were first created in the 1970s and 80s that determine what sort of flood insurance premium you have to pay. There are especially risky areas that are mapped that are called special flood hazard areas. And if you live in one of those and you have a federally backed mortgage, which many mortgages are, you're required to buy flood insurance from the government at the sort of rate they quote you. The problem is that many of these maps are really badly out of date, and Congress has actually cut funding for updating them. As recently as 2010, it was spending $224 million on this.
And to compound that, Congress passed a law last year called the Biggert Waters Act, which eliminates grandfathering, which was previously what you could do was if you lived in a certain flood hazard area, and then by no fault of your own, that flood hazard area got worse over time, you could still pay the same rate. And so now a lot of people that live in, say, coastal Louisiana, coastal neighborhoods in New York, are finding themselves in a pretty sticky situation because of Biggert Waters.
To be fair, as a taxpayer, as we all are, isn't that pretty reasonable behavior on the part of the government to raise the price if things get more dangerous? Isn't that what insurance companies do all the time?
Sure, but, you know, if you live in neighborhood like, say, Red Hook, you can't elevate a brownstone. You're not always going to be able to compensate. And some people can't afford to actually elevate their house or move, and so they get kind of stuck in the situation.
And just to be clear for our listeners, Red Hook is a neighborhood along the East River in New York, which I think it would be fair to say, right, is going to pretty routinely flood in the coming years.
Right, and that's one of the neighborhoods that after Sandy, in the new maps, was placed almost entirely inside what they call an A-zone, which is part of the flood hazard layer.
And so what are they supposed to do in Red Hook if you're in an A-zone and you have like a 10-story apartment building? What exactly is it they're supposed to do?
Well, they're still kind of wrangling over that right now. Mayor Bloomberg actually released a quite extensive and ambitious plan to save coastal New York, which faces a funding gap right now, and no one's quite sure if it'll be able to be implemented. But some of the other problems are if you can't afford to stay in your brownstone, whether or not you can move out or sell it. Because right now the Biggert Waters Act is still being debated in Congress, Mary Landrieu, Senator of Louisiana, is pushing for an amendment to scale it back. A lot of people in coastal areas are not sure whether or not their property values are going to plummet yet.
But it's really a tricky situation because on the one hand, you don't want the government paying to, you know, subsidize people living in risky areas. But on the other hand, you know, if you've sunk your savings into buying a house on the bayou and your flood insurance goes up to, you know, we're seeing rates as high as $25,000, $28,000 a year, you can't live in that home anymore and you also can't sell that home.
Right, because the prices of the insurance is so high. Now, I want to go back to this mapping thing because our most recent story published at ProPublica.org this week on this subject struck me as very baffling. I mean, we all, you know, most of us have smartphones or GPSs. Back in the days of Columbus, mapping was a kind of complicated, inexact science. But I thought the mapping issues in the world were all solved by GPS and satellites and so on. Why are the government's maps so far off?
Well, it's complicated.
Isn't it always?
The maps that were originally created in the 70s and the 80s relied on technology that just wasn't as advanced as it is today. The sort of contours of the land that are mapped that show you, you know, how high your house is above floodwaters were often mapped very roughly using maybe, you know, 20-foot contours. Today, using a new technology called LIDAR, which is actually really cool, and it involves airplanes flying and shooting sort of laser pulses and getting the stuff back to them. Using that new technology, you can have contours that are, you know, 2 feet apart and are 10 times more accurate than the old stuff. The problem is that when FEMA has been updating its maps, often it has updated them with partially or wholly old information that can be distorted when the maps are digitized and places homeowners who might not be at great risk of flooding into zones where they're forced to buy flood insurance.
So, Al, you've put together some news applications online that allow people to learn more about this subject. Tell us a little about how they work.
Sure. So one of the projects we did recently was actually a 3D map of New York City, where you could explore some of the flood-prone areas of the city and actually see in 3D how far up the floodwaters came during Sandy and compare them to both FEMA's preliminary maps, which were just released, and the existing maps, which came out in 2007, but were based on 1983 data. So you could actually spin the city around and look to see how far up the waters would come in FEMA's so-called perfect storm.
Well, by the way, how does it come out? So, I mean, in general, did Sandy outdistance the predictions, or how does it look?
It tracks very similar to Sandy. There was a lot of jostling in the comment period about these high wave velocity zones, which are the most expensive flood insurance zones. And in the first drafts of the maps that came out right after Sandy, the V zones were higher because they hadn't done what's called an overland wave study. But those were scaled back after they did the study.
And there's a second news app, isn't there?
Yes. We also did an app about SBA loans that went out right after Sandy. And those actually could be given to homeowners and businesses. And we found that quite a lot of SBA loans given in flood zone areas.
Does that mean the government is not talking to itself?
It's kind of one of these cases where SBA's mission is much different than FEMA's, where SBA, when we talked to them, they said it's their job to make communities whole again. FEMA's job is to look to see where floods are going to happen. So it is kind of a case like that.
Well, it sounds like a classic bureaucracy, but who's looking out for the taxpayer?
I guess SBA is hoping they'll get paid back, but
that could be hard if the business goes underwater. Now, let's talk about people. So that's the computer science of it. So we inadvertently in the government end up creating maps that aren't accurate, and some people who are in who should be out, and some people who are out who should be in. So talk about a specific case, because I know we've looked at a couple of these. So how does that affect ordinary citizens?
So here's one case I wrote about in my most recent story, which is of a woman named Donna Edgar, who lives in a ranch house out in rural Texas, about 60 miles north of Austin. FEMA finalized new maps for her area last year, which placed her in a flood zone. She thought that this was strange. Her house had never flooded. So she went about the long process of trying to find out why she was in this flood zone and to get out, which took her about a year, almost $1,000 in surveying costs that she had to pay out of her own pocket, and, you know, sort of endless phone calls with FEMA and floodplain officials in the area.
She paid some insurance during that year as well.
Yes, yes, she did. She also paid an insurance premium, which she has not got refunded, although FEMA has refunded that for some other homeowners.
Well, that's kind of remarkable. I mean, do we have any sense of how widespread these mapping problems are? I know we've talked to some people, but is there a sense of how many people around the country could be affected by this?
It's very difficult to know because the sort of problems with outdated data in these maps really vary. Some maps have one problem, some map have another. But I can tell you in the 2 or so hours since this story has been up on the web, I've already gotten phone calls from people and comments from people who have said, yes, this has happened to me too. Please keep looking into it.
So I guess one thing you'd advise homeowners is if you get a bill for flood insurance, educate yourself as to what the map really looks like before paying it.
Yeah, although in some cases, say if you're applying for a mortgage on a home and the area has been mapped into a flood zone, you can't get a mortgage until you pay the flood insurance premium, and the insurance company will bill the bank directly. So there's really no way to get out of it in that case.
So, Al, as somebody who's adept in the world of computers and code, is there a fairly straightforward fix for this? I mean, if you were given an unlimited budget and you were FEMA's chief technology officer, what would you do to stop this?
Probably throw a lot more money into engineering and surveying, which is what they're doing, but there's no perfect thing to focus on. I mean, right now, some of the stories that Theo focused on were out in rural areas, and they've been doing a lot of work in areas like New Orleans and New York right now because, frankly, a lot of people live there. And so it makes sense to be updating those. But, you know, we don't know how long those maps will stay current.
Does the government have the courage of its convictions on this to acknowledge what seems to be the truth, which is that we've allowed a lot of development in places which, over the next several decades, global warming is going to make uninhabitable? I mean, and the answer to that would be, of course, you have to raise your flood insurance premiums to a point where people move out. Do you see FEMA doing this?
I'm not sure if it's really FEMA's purview to do that. So much land use regulations and that sort of stuff happens at the local or, you know, the county level. While the government has programs that can subsidize people living in these areas, there's very little they can do to keep people from living in these areas.
Well, although, as you point out, once the premium hits $28,000 a year, people find a way out because they're not going to pay that, right?
Yeah, but that's not the government keeping you from living in an area. It's just stopping the subsidy that it was putting in before.
Right. One of the programs that FEMA put in, I think it was last year, was this idea of accredited and unaccredited levees, where, say, if the levee was built by the local community and wasn't overseen by FEMA, they wouldn't count it towards the flood zone. So that seems to be one way they're pushing back, but obviously local communities in areas that have never flooded and have their own levee that's worked for 100 years are not going to be happy about that. So it's kind of a push and pull between federal government and local communities.
Well, as the waters keep rising, I can imagine we're going to have lots of stories to do in the coming months and years. Thank you both for helping us to understand the beginnings of this, and I'm sure we'll be talking again.
Thanks.
Thank you.